On today's episode of The Reminder Remedy, we are going to be continuing with our Happiness Habits series, and I want to talk about mind chatter. And so today we're going to be really leaning into a few different areas. We're going to briefly talk about optimism versus pessimism and getting a little bit of background knowledge on Marty Seligman's research on learned helplessness. And then we're going to also talk about the four different types of thoughts that we have, as well as how we explain these thoughts that we have, which is known as our explanatory styles. And then ultimately thinking about how do we use mind chatter, our thoughts, the way we capture and explain our thoughts to build flexibility and create more resilience, thus leading to more happiness. You are now listening to the Reminder Remedy podcast with Alina Conley, reminding you that everything you need is everything you got to flourish exactly where you are. We believe the world needs happier women, so we provide tools, tips, and life hacks based on the research of positive psychology. This helps you rediscover your strengths while increasing your overall happiness and productivity so that you can take action today. When women flourish, everybody wins. Let's get into today's episode. Welcome back. Welcome back. So we are still in the heart of Know Yourself November, which I am just really excited about. Like, I think that I have been preaching this for like 5 years now in terms of thinking about the power of self-discovery, self-awareness, but to really be able to give you all some meaty and just bomb resources to do that. Now it's really just on you to do the work. And by you, I mean you and me, because like the resources that I give you and the tools and the things to think about, I probably have that times 200 from all of the books and the coaching and the work that I've done myself. So cheers to continuing to get through Know Yourself November by putting forth the intentional effort to really just think about the things that we are doing, being mindful about creating and cultivating a life that allows us to flourish in not just one area, but multiple areas of our life, which we know it's what's most important. So before we kick off the episode, I just want to remind you that if this is something that when you think about learning more about yourself, becoming a better version of yourself, doing the work to get it done, if that just like literally makes you do the Tootsie Roll, then I want to invite you to become a part of the Flourishing Women community that we have with the Reminder Remedy Company. It is just getting kicked off. We actually just had our first monthly masterclass yesterday, and I'm recording this ahead of time, so I'm trying to hopefully get my dates right. But the first monthly masterclass is all about learning how to effectively use self-coaching tools. So obviously we are in the era of consumption and we get stuff thrown at us all day, every day, whether it be through social media, through articles, blogs, podcasts. We are not at a shortage of knowledge, but for many of us, it's thinking about now that I have this knowledge and somewhat awareness of the things that are out there, how can I actually put them into good usage in my everyday life and do that consistently? And I know for me, that sometimes has been a big source of anxiety in the past. It's like, Alina, when you know better, you do better. But for me, just knowing and not being able to act on some of the things that I was reading and the knowledge that I was acquiring really just made me feel like a failure at times. It made me feel like a hypocrite. It made me feel like I was stuck or I didn't know where to start, was overwhelmed. And so if you're not a member of our community, I encourage you to head over so that you can catch the replay of that masterclass where I go through some very basic self-coaching tools and kind of the foundation of where I like to start with a lot of my one-on-one private clients. But it's also just the home for where you can come month to month to get free masterclasses on scientifically proven ways to improve your overall well-being. So head over. It's in my Instagram bio, and that's at The Reminder Remedy on Instagram, and just click in the bio where it says join our TRR Flourishing Women community. So, you know, we talked about this power of self-awareness, and one of the things that we talked about on the last episode was kind of using some of these areas of focus to create building blocks for happiness, or what I'm calling happiness habits, which just really means taking the time to think about what are the things that are either bringing us joy or stressing us out, right? So last episode, we talked about this whole idea of being a maximizer and having too many choices and being paralyzed by that. But we also need to equally think about how this concept of resilience goes hand in hand with creating happiness. And I believe that on the episode where I interviewed Valerie Burton, she mentioned that, you know, resilience is kind of her jam. Resilience and happiness and positive psychology are all her things, but she really leans into resilience topics when she goes to speaks and when she writes. But she mentioned on the interview with me how she felt like you really can't have one without the other. And I think that I personally respect, and what I love about the field of positive psychology is just that, you know, it is the permission to be human. It's the part of dealing with our dark side against our upsides, and not just thinking, oh, you know, in order for me to have a flourishing life, I have to be someone who 99.9% of the time is walking around with a smile on my face and hugging everybody. No, it's about me being able to take what life gives me and choosing what I do with it. And that's that resilience piece of it. And so as we continue to build our happiness habits, I wanted to lean into some of the resilience skill sets. And a lot of that starts with identifying what are we thinking about? What is our mind chatter that we're dealing with? And while resilience can honestly be an entire course, and I have some great real-time resilience hacks for you and courses that you could go register for that I'll definitely recommend in the future, I wanted to think about getting us in the mindset of becoming more aware and more mindful about spending time building skills around our thoughts. You know, starting with mind chatter, as we like to call it. So what we're constantly thinking about, even on a subconscious level, when we're not really wanting or desiring to talk about or think about some things, that mind chatter is just like that constant wheel. And this is an area that we can't escape. It's our human instinct. And for many people, when I first get them in my chair, right, i.e. Zoom, that's what I can even physically see on their face, is like a million thoughts per hour around their mind chatter. So, you know, we know fundamentally things about our thoughts. We know our thoughts become things. If you have been rocking with me for a while, you know that I am abundantly vested in the power of your thoughts and affirming and just positive thinking. We've even heard things like, as a man thinketh, he doeth. right? I love that some of those older clips that you can find on YouTube about just the phenomenon around the power of thoughts. And then we also know that scripture talks about, you know, the power of the tongue and capturing our idle thoughts as a way for us to flourish. But I want to take it a step further because many of us have thought about how we think, but we have really never thought about how we actually explain our thoughts. And this kind of separates the difference between someone who is optimistic and someone who is pessimistic. So today we're going to talk about optimism versus pessimism. We're going to talk about four different types of thoughts that is brought to us by Emilia over at the Flourishing Center. And then we're going to lean into this these explanatory tongue twister, which come from Martin Seligman in the field of positive psychology, which was just a game changer for me because I have always felt like I was pretty optimistic. And I do think that I am in general optimistic, but there are times where I can be thinking one thing, but the way that I explain how things happen to me would qualify me as a pessimist. And many of us have a habit of taking our beliefs and letting them capture us in a way where we explain things that happen to us in a very pessimistic way, which ultimately turns into how we become helpless in certain areas of our lives. And then ultimately, our goal for today's episode is just thinking about becoming more aware of how we explain these thoughts and then creating flexibility around them. You know, it's not something that just turns on and off immediately, but being able to be aware and then just being flexible in the terminology and the tone and even the speed in which we let things come out of our mouth could be a game changer. And then I'm going to actually continue our conversation about mind chatter and kind of how we can reframe our mind chatter and use things like cognitive behavioral theory to actually change and get to the core identity of our beliefs so that we can build more resilience. And we'll be continuing that conversation over in the self-coaching community. So once again, go ahead and become a member so that you can get part two of this conversation. So let's talk a little bit about learned helplessness theory and kind of this concept of pessimism versus optimism. So book alert, if you are looking for some really cool books to read just about some of his earlier books, I would say, and it's not necessarily that I would choose this one over the other, but there's a book that Martin Seligman wrote called Learned Optimism, which kind of talks about his theory that he became famous for, which is learned helplessness. Go check it out. So to give you the 30-second version of his theory, basically, in 1967, he did a test, which basically he found that when dogs were restrained in a harness and could not escape, they learned that behavior. When they were put in a box, they didn't even try to escape, even though they could. In that model, he found that 2/3 of the dogs learned that they were helpless just off of previous experience. Right. It's kind of like, OK, I try it one time. It doesn't work. I become helpless all the future times. But 1/3 of the dogs did not become helpless. They actually became resilient and looked for alternative ways. So his concept basically talks about how we are not just born helpless or pessimistic or not wanting to take adventure in certain areas, but through experiences, through setbacks, through challenges, we tend to become helpless over time. However, some of us do have a certain amount of resilience that allows us to keep going, find other ways. And the good thing is that we can cultivate more resilience. So while 2/3 were naturally not, and 2/3 of us may not naturally be resilient, there are ways that we can build it. And so he turned this learned helplessness theory into the second part of his research, which became the learned optimism theory. And this is where he took the premise of basically saying, you know, by teaching children these basic cognitive skills, they would be able to challenge the things in their life that were causing them to be pessimistic about their beliefs and become more resilient. So basically, one of the things that I mentioned, I don't know where, probably on my website, that I loved about this work was the fact that the first question I ever heard Martin Seligman pose was, what is it that you want most in life? And then he said, and based on what that is, how much of that was taught to you in school, physically in school? And none of it, purpose, passion, you know, how to deal with challenges, resilience, none of that stuff was taught in our education system. And so a lot of the work that he's done across the globe has not even just been about bringing the stuff to adults, but really thinking about how do we cultivate this in our children? And so, you know, this idea of thinking about our feelings, our belief, taking those, that natural negativity bias that we have, and turning those pessimistic ways that we tend to have as human and look at humans and looking at them as an opportunity to know, hey, you know, this is how I feel, but this is what I really believe. And based on what I really believe, I can change my actions has been huge for me as a mother. Because, you know, I work with my oldest, for example, Parker, who, you know, is a very emotional child. I think his teacher described it as Parker can go from 0 to 100. There's no in between, but the in between has to be cultivated for him. Right. So, you know, when we think about cognitive behavior or thinking about, okay, a child who can literally just immediately go from good to bad, how do we find that middle ground, right? So just to give an example, you know, some of the books that we read with Parker are all about, okay, if I have a certain feeling or emotion in my body, instead of me being pessimistic and assuming one thing, let me really think about what is the truth. What is the actual belief and the fact of what I'm experiencing? So right now I feel grumpy. I feel angry. And when I listen to my body and I get to the core of my beliefs, do I feel grumpy because I don't like this person, or I don't like school, or I don't like this activity? Or is my body telling me that I'm actually grumpy because I'm hungry? You know, my stomach is telling me that I need some sugar, that I need some protein. And so when I think about the pessimistic style or the learned helplessness that a child may have is, if I feel grumpy, it's because I'm a bad kid. If I feel grumpy, it's because I have no friends. If I feel sad, it's because nobody likes me. We are teaching kids early how to understand those feelings don't necessarily always mean the most pessimistic end of the scale. There is some middle version of that that you could figure out through your emotions, through your body, etc. I kind of went on a tangent with that, but I love the fact that in the Penn Resilience Program, they started working on developing the skills from the learned optimism theory specifically with children. So how do we define optimism? It's basically a generalized sense of confidence about the future characterized by broad expectancy that outcomes are likely to be positive. And that definition comes from Bonnie Will. And, you know, one of the things that makes up this idea of optimism is being hopeful and kind of having positive expectations. It also is how you explain certain things, which I mentioned earlier. It ultimately is summed up by how you explain what happens to you. And I want you to think about that really quickly. You know, when you, especially when you're in a negative situation or even in a positive situation, and I'll give you some examples later, think about how you explain why those things happen to you. And you will immediately know if in that certain area, perhaps you are more pessimistic or you're more optimistic about what has actually happened. And I'll give you more examples, because I know you're probably thinking, well, maybe that doesn't really make sense. But I would love for us to walk away really slowing down and think about not only how I'm thinking, but when certain things happen, especially negative, but even more so positive as well, how do we then share that information with other people? And kind of going back to, I think it was on Instagram where I talked about the benefits of happiness, right? And how happy people do well in every domain of life equally. So optimism has found to be very important because of several things. Optimists experience less distress than pessimists when dealing with difficulties in life. Optimists are much less likely to suffer from depression and anxiety. Optimists adapt better to negative events. They predict psychological and physical well-being among university students. If you're optimistic, more than likely you will have more physical well-being. They tend to have more health-promoting behaviors and enjoy better physical health than pessimists. I can definitely attest to that because, like I mentioned in, I think it was the episode with Sharice and Maya, and I'm doing shameless plugs for all these old episodes in case you need to go and binge. But I talked about how health was one of the areas that I've really, really been leaning into as an area of opportunity for me. And I can definitely say that I've been super pessimistic for a year or so around that area, which has resulted in the opposite of if I was optimistic about it, which would promote me having healthier habits. Optimists are actually at lower risk for heart disease. Okay. If you needed any other reasons not to be a pessimist, optimists exert more continuous effort and they tend not to give up. And then they also tend to learn from negative experiences. And so, you know, on the opposite side of the scope, being a pessimist can be somewhat problematic based on the research because it promotes depression, which is really why, you know, he even started doing the work around learned helplessness, was to combat this rising rate of depression. Pessimism produces inertia rather than activity in the face of setbacks. So, you know, when we think about that getting stuck that so many of us have been dealing with, it is because we can be pessimistic about the way that we're thinking about things and the way that we're explaining why things have happened. Pessimism feels bad subjectively. So, you know, being a pessimist, typically you feel blue, down, worried, anxious. And then ultimately, pessimism is a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, because pessimists don't persist in the face of challenges. So it's kind of like that spiral where it's like you start with one bad thought, one bad conversation, and then you just keep going, you know. And for me, it's always been, okay, this is my threshold. And that's what I've learned when it comes to my willingness to allow myself to be pessimistic about certain things. It's like, if I let myself get past this threshold, that's it, baby girl. Like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of what's going to happen in that area. And then even when pessimists are right and things turn out badly, they still feel worse. Their explanatory style turns the setback into an actual disaster. So it only gets worse the more and more you actually continue to dig deeper into your hole of pessimism. So the goal of optimism really needs no additional applause to say, hey, guys, let's try to be more optimistic. It kind of sells itself, right? So when we think about cultivating that optimism or optimistic thinking, one of the things that we can start with is first understanding and identifying our mind chatter. And, you know, the mind is really the source of where we then gather information on how we explain what has happened to us. So if we had to categorize four different types of thoughts, you know, and I think that this can easily be done as an activity. Like if you just go and list your, if you go right now and list the 10 thoughts circulating through your mind, I then would ask you to put a category next to each of those 10,000, and I guarantee you they can all fall in one of the four. So here are the four. Number one, factual thought. So an example of that would just be, I'm hungry, right? So then you have number two, a fantasy thought. So maybe you say, what's for dinner? I wonder if Prince will be home soon. And you start fantasizing about what could potentially, you know, be for dinner. The third type of thought is a future thought. What if he's home late? And if I wait for him to eat, then I'll eat late at night. And that's no good for me. I'll gain a lot of weight. I won't be able to work it off. Okay. This is where your girl lives. I am like the ultimate future thought person. And if you're familiar with the Enneagram number 7, that is just like our natural instinct. It's like we are dreamers and we'll go off on a tangent, not only about all the things that are great in the world and all the great things that we can do in the world, but in the land of what ifs is where we live. And then lastly, the fourth type is a judgment thought. So that could be, you know, Prince doesn't care how late we eat. He doesn't have to worry about his weight. And so when we think about what these four areas or these four different types of thoughts lead to, facts and fantasy really doesn't correlate at all much with resilience or kind of pessimism. You know, it does kind of leave room for sometimes, depending on what you're thinking about. If you go on a tangent, there could be like a lack of mindfulness there. But when we think about landing our thoughts, where for many of us, a lot of our thoughts land in the space of future and judgment thoughts, future thoughts can lead to anxiety, okay? Which is why I don't consider myself to be super anxious anymore because I have done the work in the last year. But what I will say is that I become most anxious at night during my times of insomnia because of my future oriented thoughts about the next day and the day after that and the day after that. And then judgment thoughts can actually lead to depression. And so, you know, when we think about those future thoughts, it's typically what are those what next thoughts? What if, what happens? And then the judgment thoughts are why? You know, why did this happen? Why did they do this? You know, why are they doing this to me? Kind of those victimized beliefs, which typically puts people into this learned helplessness space that Martin Seligman references. Okay. So I challenge you to kind of go back and think about, you know, your thoughts right now. What area do they fall in, and what types of thoughts are you having the most of? So I want to now think about, okay, based on the thoughts that we're having, you know, we also want to think about how are we explaining these thoughts, right? So when we think about optimism, right? Optimism doesn't necessarily just rest on, you know, positive words or imageries of victory, but it's also about the way that you think about what caused it, right? So optimism, you know, people can have positive thoughts, but then they can have beliefs that are actually pessimistic about why that positive outcome happened. So it's important for us to kind of parse through our thoughts to see, you know, it's kind of like I remember reading a book or an article where it talked about how women can't accept compliments, you know, and we have this natural tendency for if someone tells us we're cute or they give us a compliment, we immediately kind of go into this pessimistic explanatory style instead of just saying thank you, which would be an optimistic explanatory style. We'll say, oh, girl, this is from Target, right? So what is from Target? Why does that matter? Just say thank you. Or, you know, girl, you know, you killing it as a mom. Thank you. But most of us will say, oh, well, you know, I'm just leaning on the Lord. Or, and I'm giving you my own examples. I have a great husband, right? We all just kind of have like these natural ways of kind of being pessimistic, even when there might be positive experiences that we're going through. And so there are actually, we can consider them the three P's of explanatory style. So the three different ways that we typically explain why things happen to us are, number one, personalization. So this really has to do with, do we explain it as something that's internal versus external, i.e. me versus not me? Do we, number two, give it permanence? So when we're explaining things, do we look at it as permanent scenarios and situations versus temporary? So this will typically be explained as always versus not always. And then the third P is pervasiveness. So do we explain this as a global issue, a local issue, which really means everything versus not everything? And so I know that that kind of feels a little maybe confusing, so I'll give you some more examples. But typically, pessimistic thinkers as well as optimistic thinkers tend to explain the why of events in different ways. And I'll just give you an example. A pessimistic explanatory style, when a positive event happens, is not me, not always, not everything. A pessimistic person during a negative event would be me, always, everything. On the opposite side of things, if you're an optimistic person and a positive event happens, you would use me, always, everything. In a negative event, you would use not me, not always, and not everything. Once again, join the self-coaching community so I can actually map this out for you visually, because some of these concepts can be a little hard to map out over audio. But I'll give you an even better example. If you are a pessimistic, for example, and you deal with a failure or a setback, you would explain that failure or setback as, setbacks are all my fault. Okay, so that would be an internal kind of me thing. Like, this is my fault. You make it about you. As a pessimistic, most of the times you make everything permanent or always, right? So not only is the setback my fault, but it will last a long time. And then as far as the third P, as a pessimist, everything is a disaster, right? So it's like, not only is the setback my fault, it'll last forever and it will undermine everything that I do. Now, if I was an optimist to get in that same situation and I have a failure or a setback, I'll look at it and I'll say, okay, there are other factors involved. Bad events don't always last. This is an isolated event in a particular circumstance. Okay, so more examples. And you could probably start thinking about, okay, how do I typically think about things when they happen to me, right? So say another negative event happens and, you know, you are pessimistic. You may say things like, I'm all washed up, diets never work, you always nag, you never talk to me, right? If you're a permanent pessimist, it's just all, you're all in on negativity. if you are an optimist, you may say things like, I'm exhausted, right? The reason why I didn't perform is because I'm exhausted, not necessarily because I'm all washed up. You know, you may say diets don't work when you eat out. So you may be a little bit more optimistic than saying diets never work. Instead of saying you always nag,
As an optimist, you may temporarily just say, you nag when I don't clean my room up. And then instead of it being this permanent all or nothing type of thing, it's not you never talk to me, it's you haven't talked to me lately. It's how you explain things. Now, in a positive event, if you are a temporary pessimist, you may say, it's my lucky day. I try hard. My rival got tired. Whereas if you're a permanent optimist, you may say things like, I'm always lucky. I'm talented. My rival is no good. Another example in a negative event. If you're a pessimist, you typically think that universally all things are conspiring against you. And you tend to also be opposite of being optimist, which can give more specific things about why things happen the way they happen, right? So if something negative happens, you may say all teachers are unfair if you had a bad occurrence at school. But if you're an optimist, you may just point out and say, oh, you know, Dr. Conley is just an unfair professor. Okay, you see where I'm going with this kind of thing? Same scenario, how are you explaining it? Same scenario, how are you explaining it? What is your explanatory style? Your explanatory style defines if you are pessimistic or optimistic. And that's probably a huge aha moment for many of us. And I'll go back to the same thing that I said on the last episode, where it's not a trait, it's not an all in or nothing, where it's kind of like you got to label yourself as this. We are fluid people. We don't have to label ourselves as anything. But if we look at our will of life, which if you don't know what the will of life is, go watch the replay of the masterclass where we do the exercise. But if you look at the will of life or even the PERMA-V model, which looks at these six different domains, you may find that you're more pessimistic in some areas than others. And pessimism is about your explanatory style, you know? And the thing is, it's going back to what is causing you to think the way that you think. What is causing the mind chatter? What is the belief? We'll talk next week about in the community, how can you reframe your belief? But it's thinking about how can I be flexible in the way that I'm saying these things, right? I mean, many of us have become super pessimistic when it comes to politics, right? Because it's kind of like, okay, what based on my experience, all Democrats are this, all Republicans are that, all people from Georgia are this, all people from Nevada are that, right? And so the way that we explain certain things, because of maybe what we've experienced for the last 4 years, we've become pessimistic in the opportunities that can be put in front of us. You know, we just become very pessimistic, and we explain the way things are based on that. But instead of us being pessimists that who look at everything as universal, maybe we look at it as specific. This specific person caused this specific event. You know, this thing happened, but it won't happen always because blah, blah, blah. You know, same thing with work. Oh, you know, my job is awful. Every day is awful. The people here are awful. Well, no, this particular project that I'm on right now has really got me working some long hours, which is making me pretty grumpy, which is not allowing me to really want to be around my team members, which is also stifling my creativity. But hopefully once we get past this, we'll be able to recalibrate, right? So you look at it as from going from universal to permanent to, no, this is just a specific project that's temporary that can change, is where that optimism comes in. And instead of us just ruminating on our thoughts and trying to figure out how do I feel about this, pay attention to how you're explaining how you feel about it. You know, that's something new for us. It's thinking about how are we explaining what we're doing? Do we just look at it as a me event, Or is it, hey, you know, I didn't do my best right then, but that doesn't mean I'm washed up. I was just tired. Shoot, I haven't slept in 5 days, right? It's not always, you know, it's sometimes. It's not everything. It's a few things, right? So kind of thinking about how can you identify how you're explaining things? And then ultimately the goal is to understand that the thoughts themselves or the thoughts that we have, the mind chatter that we have, is not necessarily the problem. It's the fact that we have this habitual way of explaining good and bad things. And it being habitual, it becomes a pattern and just a lifestyle that we look up and we didn't even realize, like, oh, I used to be so optimistic, but because I've been in this same job that I don't like for 15 years, we've become more pessimistic. And so it's important for us to continue to cultivate that awareness and that flexible thinking, but to also know that we shouldn't be labeling things like optimism is good, pessimism is bad, or there's one right style, or everybody should think this way in this scenario, or even that it's a personality trait, because it's not. It's just about creating awareness and using that awareness and that flexibility to allow you to cultivate more positivity, more happiness, more emotions, more well-being, less stress, less heart disease, right? There are reasons why we want to cultivate these things, and just being flexible around knowing that explanatory style is a thinking style, and that, you know, based off experiences, we can get stuck in a certain style. And we can tend to limit our perspective, and that typically the stuff that we're explaining could have been learned, similar to the learned helplessness found in that study. But the good thing is that it can be changed, it can be used in a tool, and that ultimately the goal is to be flexible in our thinking. Okay, so that's our exercise for the week, is to take a journal of our thoughts and also a journal of how we're explaining our thoughts to other people. And capturing that so that you can say, how am I being, like, just super dramatic, as we would say? You being dramatic about this, girl. It's not all of that, you know? And because of me being dramatic and making it a universal thing and a permanent thing and a thing that I can't get out of, I've now taken myself into this phase where I've been stuck for a year because I'm pessimistic around building a business because I lost all this money in 2008 or whatever the case is. And the way that you're explaining it is preventing you from moving forward, because every time somebody asks you about what happened in 08, you can't get past it. Instead of just saying, oh, the world was crashing and I was a part of that, but because of that, X, Y, and Z came out of it. And we could even say that about 2020. You know, that's that optimistic style that we want to cultivate in every area of our life. All right. So I will see you guys on the other side in the self-coaching community as we continue this conversation around mind chatter, reframing, looking at how do we really recognize the beliefs that we have about ourselves and about the world, and how we can reframe those things to replete our energy and cultivate more happiness, more joy, and more fullness.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of The Reminder Remedy. Be sure to visit us at thereminderremedy.com for all of our latest information on our workshops, our freebies, and how you can stay in touch with us.